of you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to kptz.org. Our website is more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around the area. And you can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as an earlier one, or two, or three. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. If you go to our website and look up Our Town, the thumbnail image representing Our Town is actually a painting by the talented local artist Michael Hale. Some of his work perfectly captures the spirit and image of our own hometown. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who was the woman who hit the jackpot at the Wednesday night charity bingo game at the Hilltop? She let out quite a squeal. Oh, and I saw the lady who dresses only in 1880s clothing the other day. She was riding her bike, cinched in tightly in her corset. I've heard that she and her husband live as if they were in the 1880s. But interestingly, I've also heard she has a blog. Did they do that back then? Well, whatever. Meanwhile, who were the two bearded guys playing a board game at Better Living Through Coffee? They say board games are making a comeback, luring some people away from their tiny phone screens. That would be a change. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile some of the singular personalities who live here. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. We talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County, amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is a hardworking guy who has created a thriving business over the past decade, Mike Garling, the owner of Metro Bagels. He actually started it up with barely $1,000, but that's we're going to get to later in the show. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
So before we go to Metro Bagels, let's talk about you. Were you born and bred in Jefferson County?
I was not. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. Moved out here in 1997.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about Detroit. Did you go to high school there?
I did. My parents put all six of us, me and my siblings, through private school. We went to a Catholic school in Grosse Pointe, actually, just outside of the city limits of Detroit.
Did you play sports there, or were you a nerd? What were you doing?
A little bit of everything. I dabbled in every sport. I tried at least every one of them for one season, basketball, football.
Yeah. Were you one of those rare kids who had it all figured out, I'm going to be X when I grow up?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, what was your vague plan?
I was not that fond of school. I was good at it, and I got good grades, but it was a very disciplined and academic-orientated environment with nuns as teachers. And then I went to a Christian Brother high school, and there was brothers as teachers. So they didn't like messing around. They wanted things to be strict.
The way they wanted it.
Yeah, and I resisted that a little bit.
I see. So, well, did you want to go on to college, or were you?
I did. I'd always kind of planned on going to college, yes.
Okay. Where'd you go?
I went to Michigan State.
And what was your major there?
I started out as a computer science major, and after a few years of calculus, decided that I would need to find something that I was a little better at. And I transferred to the business school, and I graduated with a degree in general business administration.
Was there any particular course or courses that you really liked and thought were real relevant to you?
None really stick out. As a general business major, I took a lot of different types of courses, management, marketing, business law. And I liked the diversity of that, that I wasn't just focused on one thing constantly. I kind of enjoyed that.
I can barely remember my college classes. There are one or two that I hated that I sort of remember, but I can't really remember all of them. As you were nearing graduation, it probably dawned on you that you might have to get a job.
Yes. Yes. Actually, that was one of the reasons I went to college, is I knew I could put off getting a job for a while.
Good thinking. So. But it was coming around. So what were your plans?
I didn't really know at that age. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. But I had a couple of my sisters and one of my brothers actually lived in Chicago.
That's handy.
And so I knew I could go there and kind of get my feet on the ground without too much effort, since I did have some support.
Probably live rent-free for a while, at least.
For a little while. Not very long.
They weren't that sympathetic, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, so I moved to Chicago after I graduated and found a job working at the Chicago Board of Trade.
Wow.
The Futures Exchange.
How'd you manage that?
I had some connections. My sophomore year in college, I had done an internship at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which was the other futures exchange in Chicago. So when I went back, I had some names of people who I'd worked with and for when I was there that summer. And when I originally moved there, my brother was actually working at the Board of Trade as well.
Mm-hmm. I've got a feeling many of our listeners don't have a clue what a futures exchange is. Could you briefly tell us?
Sure. I worked in the financial futures, which were futures on the 30-year note, the 30-year bond, the 10-year, 5-year, 2-year, and the municipal bonds. Mm-hmm. The futures market is you are basically buying and selling the right to own that note at a future date. Also at the Board of Trade, they traded futures on grain, soybeans, corn, wheat. That was originally established for farmers so that they could guarantee a price with which to sell their crop at the end of the year. So it allowed them to have some security. And then the market became something that people were trading constantly. All of those markets still exist, although today almost all of it is done electronically.
That's
when I was there, it was kind of the tail end of open outcry, where you would literally have hundreds of people standing around in a circle, in a tiered pit, buying and selling with each other at the top of their lungs oftentimes.
Right. So. I, many years ago, went to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and saw some of that, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people there.
Yes. Yeah, I think when I left the Board of Trade, I think there was over 2,000 people just in the financial room.
Wow.
And it was just one big room with multiple trading pits for different.
How do you survive in an environment like that? How do you make yourself heard, so to speak?
You learn to speak loudly and clearly, and a lot of it is done actually with hand signals.
Huh.
At one point in one of my jobs, I wore a headset that talked to somebody at a desk across the other side of the room. Yeah, and near the end, when the last few years I was there, I worked for a broker in the 10-year note pit. My job was to do math in my head and listen to him without ever looking at him, because I was always watching the customers standing back to back to the broker I worked for, giving and receiving orders from him.
Wow. So. Math in your head. And you said you didn't like math when you were in school.
I actually enjoyed math. Calculus.
Calculus.
When,
okay.
When all the numbers left the equation, it kind of got a little more difficult.
Okay. How long were you there?
I lived in Chicago for 5 years.
Uh-huh.
I left the summer of 1997, me and my future wife, Laura, who I met at the exchange. Her father had been a member of the Board of Trade
for
25 years.
So she worked there?
She did. She graduated from college and ended up there because she wasn't sure where she was going to go. And her father said she could get a job and make some money and save, live with them, and then decide what she wanted to do.
So you were there for 5 years. And how long was she there?
She was there for a little over 3.
Walk me through this. How did you two decide that you were going to leave what must have been very exciting and well-paid jobs?
Well, my wife grew up in Southern California and was not really a city girl. She grew up on the outskirts of San Diego in a small town where kids used to ride their horses to high school.
Really? Where?
Poway, which is nothing like that anymore. Now it is
it's just a suburb now.
Yes, a sprawling suburb. There are very few farms as there were back then. But she just never really felt at home in the big city. She kind of always wanted to get back on the West Coast to a little different lifestyle, a little slower pace.
But you were from the Midwest. Had you even been to the West Coast?
I had not. And I just felt like I had the opportunity. I had been making decent money, and it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I took it as an opportunity to do some exploring.
Yeah, learn something else.
Yeah. Some new places.
How did you go about it? What was your strategy?
We put all our stuff in storage, took all our camping gear, packed up my wife's little Honda Accord, and decided to just go.
Hit the road.
Yep. So we, in the span of 3.5 months, we traveled through 22 states.
Wow.
Three Canadian provinces. We did a lot of backpacking, a lot of camping. But because we could afford it, one good example is we spent 4 nights and 5 days at Yosemite. And nice. The following day, we were sitting in a 5-star restaurant with a $100 bottle of wine and a piano player next to us, you know, and musing on how we, the other day, were just going to the bathroom in the woods.
So we experienced a lot.
So we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of places that we had talked about as possible places to move to, most of them in California, Oregon, and a couple places in Washington.
Well, so what were some of the contenders? What had you been thinking of?
Well, she knew more than I did of the places. Ashland, Oregon, Northern California, various places. We didn't want to live in a big city. We didn't want to live in LA or San Francisco. We wanted to live in a small town.
Okay.
She had lots of friends on the West Coast, and I had a few that I had moved after college that I hadn't seen. So we spent a lot of time visiting people as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we took the time to, you know, like I said, we kind of got to do whatever we wanted to. We did not have a detailed plan. We had a very vague one.
It's a nice adventure and nice to have good enough money that you didn't have to, you know, totally rough it.
Right.
Very good. Obviously, you somehow ended up in Port Townsend. How did that happen?
It's kind of by dumb luck. When we were on our trip, we had passed through Port Townsend. We had come up the West Coast all the way up from San Diego. Then we ended up camping for, I think, 2 nights at Old Fort Townsend, just because it was where we were when we needed to stop at one point. When we finally wrapped up our trip, we knew we had to kind of figure it out soon so we could get back across the mountains before winter set in. And we had just decided somewhere near Seattle, but not in the city. Mm-hmm. So we got back to Chicago, packed all our stuff up in a U-Haul, hooked the car up behind it, and drove out here. We parked the U-Haul in a police station somewhere north of Seattle. I couldn't even tell you where. I'm not sure.
Not sure.
And we had 3 days before we had to return the truck, and we spent that time exploring some more. We ended up back in Port Townsend, and we remembered it from a couple months earlier when we'd been here and just kind of stuck.
Did you have a time, like, we've got to decide by November 1st, or was it we got to decide because we're running out of money? Or
we knew we were coming back to the West Coast, and we didn't want to have to worry about crossing the pass in the snow. And we had been on the road for quite a long time. We left in June, and I think we got back to Chicago middle of October. Mm-hmm. So we were ready to settle down,
not be a nomad anymore.
Yes.
So you decide on Port Townsend. And what was your first step? Did you have a place to live, or was it
we
hard
didn't,
to find
no.
it?
No, we one afternoon sat down in what used to be the Old Town Tavern mm-hmm. with the local paper, with the leader, read through the classified ads, and found a 3-bedroom house on a dead end street with a fenced in yard for the dog that we had always wanted, and little things like that. Looked through the police briefs, I remember pretty distinctly. There were the cows were out on West Valley Road again, and a 9-year-old called 911 because her grandmother pinched her. The neighborhood we had come from in Chicago would have probably filled the leader on a daily basis with police briefs.
It was something more serious
exactly.
than what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a big change for me. It was kind of like moving to another planet. That day we were in the town tavern, there was 2 bicycles sitting out on the sidewalk just on their kickstands. And I asked the bartender, I said, "Do people will just leave their bike out there unlocked?" And he said that one of them's been there for 3 days.
So, wow.
Okay. Which was very unlike where I grew up.
Yes. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who make up the fabric of the community here. Today, my guest is Mike Garling, who's the owner of Metro Bagels, which has outlets in both Port Hadlock and Port Townsend. But the Western Washington part of the story doesn't really start there. Metro Bagels didn't even exist when Mike and his wife, Laura, first moved here. So you're just telling me you found a place to live, but what about a job? I presume you had to go back to work, and there isn't really a board of trade in Port Townsend.
That is true. We both spent quite a while till we found something. My wife ended up with a job waitressing, and she actually tended bar in the town tavern for a very brief period of time. We both worked for John Gunning in his market out in Port Hadlock, Swan Farms, it was called. Then I eventually fell into a job with Pygmy Kayaks. I had been hanging around a lot because I was very interested in getting a boat and building one.
Wait a minute. I thought you worked at Waterfront Pizza first.
That was the very first job I had.
Okay.
Yep. Most of the time, I had more than one,
okay.
which I see a lot of people today still have to do.
It's still happening. Okay, yeah. So tell me about your experience with Pygmy.
I was hanging around all the time, talking to the guys, asking questions about the boats, trying to figure out where I could build one. I didn't have a space at home to build it in. Got to know the guys who all worked there pretty well. Eventually, they decided that I should come work for them with them.
Some of our listeners might not know what Pygmy Boats is. Can you explain briefly?
Yeah. It's a company that was founded by John Lockwood, who has had it here in Port Townsend for got to be close to 30 years, I believe, now. They make wooden kayak kits. The pieces are cut and all the materials are packaged up. It arrives in your door in three boxes, and it's up to you to assemble it.
Uh-huh. That's a challenge. Not everyone would be up to doing it.
No, but I'm sure you've seen one around town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's for sure. And I think by now they're pretty well known, not just in Port Townsend.
Oh, absolutely. They're world famous, yes. Yeah. And even then, they had a very large presence.
And so what did you end up doing for Pygmy?
Over the years, I worked for them for over 8 years. And at one point, I kind of did just about everything. I started out mostly working in the production site, but I would also work in the office. I would answer the phones. There's a lot of customer service to people when they're building their boats and they need help.
Yes, yes, I can imagine.
Sometimes they just want somebody to tell them, yes, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Don't worry.
Just keep a going. Little, you can do
yeah,
it.
A little confidence booster. It was interesting that the four guys who worked in the production shop when I got hired, within 6 months, all four of them had left for other endeavors. So I pretty quickly became the senior employee in the manufacturing plant.
It sounds like you enjoyed your time there.
I did. I did enjoy it.
So why'd you decide to leave there?
I had been there quite a while, and I felt that I had maxed out my potential there. It is a production job, so you're kind of doing the same thing every single day. And I had done it all before. And I know working for a small company, I had kind of maxed out my pay potential as well.
And I presume by then you might have had a family to support.
Yes. My oldest daughter, Nyla, was born in 2002. And my daughter, Gia, was born in 2006.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do after Pygmy?
I briefly worked for another boat manufacturer in Port Townsend for Lee Shore Boats. I went in to help a person who had purchased that business. He understood his customers extremely well. He knew what they wanted and what they needed in their boats, but he did not really know how to price them or how to make money by making the boats.
Important.
Very important.
Mm-hmm. So what happened there?
The owner that I worked for, Jay, was going through a hard time in life.
Well, it must have been about the time of the big recession, too.
That was kind of the final straw, yes, yeah. 2008. And we decided that he needed to sell the business, that it wasn't a good fit for him and it wasn't going to work. We found a purchaser, and unfortunately, right before we were supposed to sign the paperwork, Jay passed away.
That's sad.
Yeah.
So that left you sort of at loose ends?
Originally, when Jay was going to sell it, I was going to just be out of a job. Since Jay was not around to help transition the new owners, I stuck around for probably 6 months, helped the new owner kind of get a grasp on everything. The owner was from Port Angeles and had always intended on moving the business to Port Angeles. When that finally happened, he offered me a job, but I did not want to drive to Port Angeles every day for work.
Yeah, so that's a big commute.
Yes.
Fun. What happened next?
I was unemployed on and off for a year, year and a half. Spent a lot of time volunteering at my kids' school. At the time, the school was very new, so there was plenty of stuff that needed to be done, and most of it was done by volunteers and parents like myself. That's actually where I met the man I started Metro Bagels with, Jeff Dale.
How did you two cook up the bagels?
We were both part of what was called the site committee. So we did maintenance, took care of the buildings. We were trying to get a new roof on our office building, and the school being so new and being kind of cash poor, Jeff decided he was going to start a fundraiser to make the money for the roofing materials.
Right.
And he was going to hold on to it rather than have the school try to do it, because the school would constantly have some other fire that would come up that would have to get
put
out.
The money
and so
over there.
The money had been diverted away from the roof project a couple occasions already. Mm-hmm. So Jeff started baking bread. He would bake dozens of loaves on Thursday night and dole them out to the other parents and faculty and whoever was interested in buying them on Friday mornings. After a few weeks of that, he also started baking bagels to expand his market a little bit keep people coming back.
Right.
Jeff and I were good friends. We were hanging out a lot together. He had just finished building out his house, so he was looking for work. And I was kind of bouncing around to various part-time jobs. We decided to start a business, not knowing what that business would be initially, just that we should start something because we knew that was the way to be able to stay here.
Right. You need a job, and there aren't that many great jobs in Port Townsend.
We figured we'd create our own.
Okay. How did you start up the bagel business?
There was a place in Port Hadlock years ago, the Bagel Haven, that was pretty successful. The reason it went away was not economics. It was more of personal reasons.
So you thought there was
a niche
there.
I knew that it could work. Jeff's bagels were delicious, and everybody who had them agreed. We decided that we would just try to do the farmers markets the summer 2010 and see if there was a demand.
And was there?
There was a very good one, actually. We did the Sunday Farmers Market in Chimicum, and we did the Port Ludlow Farmers Market.
Okay, you knew there was a demand, but how did you go from point A to point B?
We started it cheaply because we just needed the equipment to do the farmers market. We rented a kitchen.
Right.
So we didn't have to invest in a lot of equipment. We mostly invested in our display and a few specialty items that we needed for the kitchen. We bought a pop-up tent and put our logo on it and started immediately branding ourselves.
So you had the business background to do a business plan and everything?
Yeah, and Jeff had a graphic design and marketing background, so we made a conscious effort to brand ourselves very well right from the beginning. When the farmers markets wrapped up in the fall, we felt like it was worth pursuing farther. So we found the location where we are right now on Thomas Street in Port Townsend on the roundabout. Once again, we didn't use a lot of funds because we did a lot of the work ourselves. We did all the remodeling ourselves. Mm-hmm. We built it on sweat equity. By putting our time and effort into it, we were able to build it in, and we opened that location in January of 2011.
But at some point, I know you guys went to the local investing group, Lion.
We did. Renting the kitchen worked very well for a long time, but there was always sort of a fear in the back of our minds that if something happens with the landlord, we could potentially just be out of business with no control
That's
over
scary.
It. We had been looking for another location to build out the bakery. We tried a couple different locations and bumped up against a lot of rules and regulations with septic systems. So finally, the space that I'm in right now in the Kivley Center opened up. At the time, it was quite vacant. There was a lot of empty spaces. Since it was built with the capacity to have a full tenancy, it had the capacity for us to use it with very little fear of the septic system being overtaxed. So when we got that all worked out, we started doing the same thing. Jeff spent most of his time building out the shop in Port Hadlock, and I spent most of my time running the shop in Port Townsend. And we opened that location and our own bakery in the fall of 2012.
That's pretty rapid growth there.
Yeah, we were busy and focused.
Yes, I would think so. I just want to mention for listeners who don't know the group Lion that this is a group of local investors that have invested in a lot of local businesses and to help people. Like, I had a guest on the show a little while back, Matt Wallace, who borrowed funds from Lion to buy Hope Roofing.
Yep.
And hopefully that will work out fine for him. And we also had Earl Merman, the de facto leader of the group, on the show a while back.
So when we went to build out the bakery, then we did need to borrow some money to buy the kitchen equipment, to buy ovens, to buy refrigeration, and buy a boiler to boil the bagels in. So Jeff and I put together a proposal, submitted it to the Lion Group, and had a number of people respond pretty quickly. Because we had already existed for over a year in the Port Townsend location, people were familiar with us.
Yeah, you had a track record.
We had a track record. We had a proven product and a proven market. And so it was actually quite easy. I spent a lot of time building budgets and proposals. And most of the people who had them, they skimmed them, but they didn't read them.
That's they often
were,
the way.
They came in with their checkbook in their hand, and they were ready to support us.
That's
great. It was actually a good feeling.
That's great. And you've since paid them back.
I have, yep. I had five lenders that we used to borrow the $50,000 to build the bakery, and they've all been paid back in full.
That's great.
And at the time, they were making 5% interest, which in 2009 was
quite good. Very good. Yes, exactly. We were talking earlier, and you said that the two shops are actually fairly different. The clientele is different. Can you explain that a little?
One good example is just the busiest days of the week in Port Townsend are Saturday and Sunday, the weekends, and especially during the summer. Whereas the Port Hadlock shop Saturday is almost always my quietest day of the week, and I'm not open on Sundays because it was even quieter than Saturday. Most of the clients that I have in the Port Hadlock shop either live or work somewhere out there in the county. My neighbor down the hill is the Northwest School of Wooden Boat Building. The students come up quite often.
Yeah, I can.
As well as the faculty and staff. Yeah, and Port Townsend, the demographics are slightly different. I probably get more customers through the door on a daily basis in Port Hadlock, but their average purchase is lower. The people that come into the Port Townsend shop tend to spend a little more money. They might buy a 20-ounce mocha with their sandwich, whereas the guys from the boat school are all drinking small cups of drip coffee because they're all full-time students.
I can see that, huh? But the bakery is in Hadlock.
All the bagels are baked fresh every day in Port Hadlock. And then every morning we bring everything to Port Townsend.
Okay. In any business like that, you'll end up with some leftover bagels. What do you do with them?
They go right next door to the studio here to the food bank.
That's great. Yeah. I'm sure they appreciate it. And the people who patronize the food bank probably love it.
Bagels
are a good thing. Can you just tell me a little bit your thoughts about the future?
The future is somewhat up in the air. There is some development happening up in Upper Sims Way, and I can see the writing on the wall that my location, that little 1930s residence where I have my business, will probably not be there a few years from now.
There's being a big structure built right sort of behind you and next to you. So
right.
There's
a lot of stuff going on the Upper Sims Way there, and I really enjoy that neighborhood. I think it's perfect for my business. It exposes me to the tourists who come and go every weekend from town. It's close to the hospital and the business park and the mill where the working folks are.
Yeah, so you've got a good cross-section. Well, we can't predict the future, but because we are almost out of time, let's just switch gears for a second. I know you work incredibly hard, but you must have a little bit of time off. What are some of the things you do in that time?
The thing I do most that really I enjoy the most is I play music with my friends. Every week we get together and just make loud rock and roll music with no pressure. We joke we don't like to practice, we just like to play. So we played for the first time in public. Actually, this summer we played at a party, but basically we're just all playing for ourselves just to blow off some steam and relax.
That's great. Looking at it now, do you still love Port Townsend?
I do. It's a pretty amazing place. I live in Chimicum. We lived in Port Townsend for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then when we got ready to start a family and buy a home, we ended up in Chimicum. Mm-hmm. But it's only 12 minutes from the Hadlock shop and 15 minutes from the Port Townsend shop.
Yeah, it's all the same in a way.
It is.
I want to thank you for being on the show. Here's to your continued success. And I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the man in the glass booth, editor and producer of Our Town. He smooths out all the ahs and ers and you knows and makes me and my guests sound so much better than we actually sound. I also want to thank Program Director Larry Stein, Board Chair Robert Ambrose, and Station Manager Kate Ingram. All three work really hard to make KPTZ an excellent community station. And I want to thank you, the listener. You've been tuned to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. My guest today has been Mike Garling, the owner of Metro Bagels. Thank you, and keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.